Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends? My name is Emily Lang. I'm an actress, writer, singer, codependent returnee from rock bottom and a gratefully recovering addict. And this is the podcast where we aim to rid the shame, the highs and lows and deadly blows that ultimately led us to the lessons that we never knew we needed to learn, but are so grateful that we did. So, if you or someone you know, someone you love has suffered and been under the grips of an eating disorder, you will know how all-consuming, frightening, confusing, and addictive it can be. Recovery is incredibly difficult, I'm not going to lie, but beyond anything that can be found by being a size zero, and I am speaking from experience here. My guest, Lexi Carroll, and I are discussing all this and more today. Okay, so it is 2016 and the years-ish surrounding that time. A little bit forward, maybe a little bit backwards.
Maybe.
But it's like 2016 is kind of the gunshot that started this race. And my guest today is super tiny at around about 11 years old. And this is where they began their journey. And so in this moment, why do you think you've got no friends?
Oh, I think I've just started secondary school and I'm very overwhelmed. I've got a lot of feelings and I think I just didn't really know how to deal with them. And for some reason, I went down the spiral of a big, long journey with an eating disorder.
Right.
And yeah, that was, I think, probably a lot of it. I thought it would help me to fit in, but
yeah, of course,
very much did not help the friendship things. I think went very much in the other direction.
It started when you were 11.
Like, yeah,
it started with that secondary school. Do you remember any kind of thought process that started that? Because, like you said, it was maybe a sort of effort to fit in or be, I don't know, be noticed or be cool. And it's not like, I'm not like, not in a, like an attention seeking way, in a, this is what I need to be able to survive in this environment.
Yeah. I think it's really weird because at that age, like I didn't really think about like my body that much.
No.
I think that all came a lot after like I got ill.
Yeah.
But I think at that time it was more of like a control thing. I was like, and it's so like subconscious, like, I don't think there was any thought going on, but like, I guess, and yeah, I mean, maybe like social media and like diet culture and stuff does obviously have a bit of an effect, but I think most of it was just like, I don't know how to like control everything else going on, but I do know how I can like control what I'm putting in my mouth, and like I can 100%. Like I have some sort of like focus, I think, in that. But yeah, I think I don't really remember how it all happened, but it happened very quickly, and it was very much a like just a spiral, I think.
Yeah, because it just goes.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you kind of go, oh, this works.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. It's just like there's no way of really putting a foot on the brakes. Yeah. Especially, I guess, like, because at age 11, you're prepubescent as well. So it's like, it's not like you've come into your body. And so it's because when I started, it just makes it sound like something really different. But when my effort to control my food and things like that began, I was 16. And so already, like, I'd hit puberty, I had boobs, and I had hips and an ass. And so it was much more obvious when I started to lose weight.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it was like, oh, you look different now.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas before that time, when you're still a baby and you start to restrict food, I guess it's maybe not as clear cut.
Oh, definitely. Like, I think, like, the people around me probably, like, I have a really, really close family, but I think they wouldn't have, I mean, they caught on pretty quickly, but at that point it was, like, it's so difficult. But I think, yeah, because you're not, like, I was always quite small as a child, and like not that people with eating disorders are necessarily small, but like the what was going on in my eating disorder like could probably wouldn't have been like that noticeable.
Yeah, because they go, you're just little.
Yeah, you're just little. That's just what she's like.
Yeah,
but yeah, actually things were not like that.
No.
But yeah, it's a weird one when you're that young.
And then at what point, if you don't mind me asking, like how far did it progress before you had to take time out of school and things like that?
Oh, it was like the end of year seven. So
really?
It was pretty quickly.
Okay.
That things, yeah, I would definitely put that down to like my relationship with my family and like,
yeah.
I think school as well, like they caught on and quickly was out of school for a bit. And yeah, I think at that age, like that definitely is like massively affected like friendships and things because like everybody's, I think I sort of had friends, but I wasn't really like cemented in any sort of friendship at that point. And then you're out of that environment for a while and then going back like, and I was sort of in and out for a bit, but like you never really like have that sort of solid like, and everyone's sort of like, she's the like she's here sometimes and she's not here, who are you?
And kids and also secondary school, because we're all just doing our best to like survive. People can be really, really fickle, and it's oh my god, I was so fickle. Like, fucking hell. I didn't have any loyalties at
one does at that
literally
age.
I was like, it's actually kind of, oh, fuck, I'm thinking about it now. I remember I was given, like, a golden opportunity when I was about 14 to basically, like, go up a tier into the like, cool group.
Oh, no.
And I was like, see ya!
Yeah.
To all my friends.
Fair
I was like,
enough.
Gone.
We
and
would
it,
all.
And I look at it now and I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Are you, fuck, because I would never do that now. But obviously, when you're in that environment, it's like, you gotta do what you gotta do to survive. And
brutal.
So it's brutal. And so being the person on the outside of it who's like coming in and coming out, it must have been so tough to like try and re-inject yourself into that kind of like group of people.
And I think I didn't know who I was because I was just like, it takes over your whole life and that's who you are. You're the like.
It is. I think that. For many people, and hopefully the people who are listening who haven't suffered and would like to know more about it, it is all-consuming.
Mm.
It is what you think about morning and night. Everything is about what the next meal is going to be and how's it going to look.
Yeah.
I remember I used to spend, like, hours in Waitrose. which is nowhere else. I'm just like going up and down the aisles being like, I wonder what food I can find.
Yeah.
That's really low calorie. That's going to be like the new find for me.
Yeah.
It's all you think about. It's literally all you think about.
It's so silly, the things that like you do.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I just remember like planning how I'd like manage to not eat something, like how I was going to like store it and like how I would. And it's just, yeah, it completely ruins all of your relationships because everyone's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, and I struggle to empathize with that like person because it is so like crazy, but it just, I don't know what it is. It's just a very difficult illness, I guess.
It's really difficult.
But yeah, it's, yeah, the things it like makes you do are very silly.
Yeah. And the weird highs it gives you as well, because it's very addictive. It's very, very addictive.
Yeah, it certainly like it serves its purpose, like, and I think it's like all of those sorts of things. It's just a coping mechanism. Everyone has their like different things.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a very weird one.
How long did this go on for, this the real troubles?
I mean, I think there were like two main stints, like one in year seven and then one like year 10.
Gosh, that's tough as well.
And then it was actually when lockdown happened, which was obviously an awful time for so many people, but I think for me it kind of pulled me out a bit, because obviously like everything else, like a lot of the other stuff just like stops, and I couldn't even go to like appointments because like we couldn't see each other or anything. And so, and I think at that point I'd been in CAMHS for a long time, and like they were sort of like, we don't know what to do with you at this point, like I was fine but I wasn't like amazing, like everything's very on a like edge of being okay, and I think almost being taken out of out of school, out of everything else, and I was just with my family, it made things a lot simpler, and I like was able to just like find other things. And then, yeah, since then, it's just like building up a world around yourself that like makes, like, obviously it's not a choice to like go down that rabbit hole, but it makes it like, you have so many more reasons to like pull yourself like up and be like, I can't do this because I have so much to lose now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, since then it's just been, so much has happened. So much like joy has happened that I'm like in a place where I'm like, I can't go back there. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's great. But yeah, I think it all started really with lockdown, because that was such a like, I mean, it was ideal for me because I could just literally sit at home, and that was all I wanted to do really at that point. And yeah, so weird. But I think for everyone that time was a very like,
it's very weird,
a transitional,
yeah,
like everyone went through something, I think.
Yeah.
But for me it was,
it's being like literally forced to sit in your personal safe environment.
Yeah, yeah.
And not having to adapt to places where you feel uncomfortable, or having to push yourself with that kind of energy that you, like, I have it sometimes, you know, when you go out to see people that you don't really want to see, and you're like, the amount of energy this is going to fucking take.
Yeah.
What am I going to do to get myself through this?
Yeah.
Like, all of that was taken away and actually gave you a chance to recover, which is just so important. It's being given the space to recover, and so many people aren't able to have to get that. And it's lockdown, obviously it was COVID, that time was awful, the amount of death, terrible for so many people as well. It was actually a really restorative time.
I think it's
Which is strange to talk about.
But what about you? Did was there any like moment that you had where you were like, I can't do this anymore? Or is it just an ongoing like
I was very anorexic when I was at drama school. Which is like, of course I was. Like drama school as well is just, actually, do you know what? I'm going to tell this fucking story live on the podcast, because I've actually never spoken about it publicly before. And it is awful. So there was a head of acting at Guildhall where I went.
Oh yeah.
And who doesn't work there anymore? And when in second year, when we had to have our headshot, we had our headshots done for third year.
Yeah.
Super exciting time. Everyone's like, "Well, isn't that amazing?" Yeah. I was like, the faculty knew I had a meeting problem. Like, they knew.
Yeah.
And I had my headshots done. When we had our headshots done, we had to take them to one or the other of heads of acting. And I took mine to head of acting and like proudly showed him my headshots. Yeah. And his response was, you need to get a bit of collarbone in shot so people can see that you're thin, because otherwise you just look a bit porky.
Oh my gosh.
Porky was the word that he used.
What the hell?
Porky.
Like, that's awful. I'm so sorry.
But this is like why, like, I mean, it's getting better. It's getting there. But so many women, no wonder we feel like this.
Yeah.
When you've got men in their 50s or 60s going, you look porky.
Yeah.
And casting directors need to see that you're thin. Otherwise, you're not going to work.
Awful.
That was horrendous. And then I was really not very well. And, but I'm trying to think, like, when it stopped. Because it happened, I was obsessed.
Mm.
Oh, actually, do you know what? I resisted going to eating disorder therapy for a very, very long time. I was like, I don't want to go. Because in my head, going to eating disorder therapy meant I was going to get better, which meant I was going to get fat.
Oh, exactly, yes.
And that doesn't add up.
Yeah.
And in and I remember her saying, would you rather be a stone heavier and happy or a stone lighter and essentially suicidal?
Yeah.
And if I'm a stone heavier, I can't be happy. That will never work.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
It's so weird. Yeah.
Which is obviously, like, in hindsight, I'm like, that's bonkers.
Yeah, no, it's exactly that. It's like, something switches in your brain. And I'm like, I really feel like with eating disorders and like addiction and stuff, it's such a like, it must be something in the brain that like just doesn't, it's so like biological.
It's like cannot compute.
Yeah. And it's just like, it feels so irrational when you're out of it, but like, it feels like it's like, that's just the way that you think. It's like, it's so weird. Mm. It's actually so weird, but it's just,
It's crazy.
The stuff that I would like, I remember like sitting in like school bathrooms waiting to go to an appointment, and I'd like chug loads of water. I'd like hide in the bathroom with my water bottle and just like be like chugging liters of water, because I was like, if I have to like keep like looking like I was putting on weight. And it was like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
Oh, so silly.
Yeah, because otherwise they're gonna I remember there was a film that was on Netflix about someone who was suffering really badly with anorexia, and I remember there was another character in it who was on a feeding tube. And the lead character went, oh, I know how many calories there are in that, and like revealed the amount of calories, and then this other girl just burst into tears.
Yeah,
because I understand for people who haven't been there, who can't sort of shove their nervous system into that situation, like, the idea of having a certain amount of calories pumped into your body is so frightening.
Yeah.
The idea, it's so frightening.
Yeah.
Because, like, the calorie counting, the I can't eat this poached egg.
Yeah.
Because it has more than, I don't fucking know, my God. There was a time when I'd be able to tell you exactly how many calories I want in a poached egg. But the idea of that and like the restriction, that being taken out of your control and having this thing literally put into your body is so, so frightening. And so you want to, even though the idea of putting on weight is so bad, you want to appear as though you are
still be able to control
before that thing happens.
Yeah.
But, it's, Also, one thing I want to mention, did you get this? If someone said to me, oh, you look really healthy.
Oh, Jerez, yeah.
Oh my God, I'd be like.
Yeah. Oh, that was such a thing when I'd be like, yeah. Like going back to school, I'd like. Like, I remember, I vividly remember someone being like, oh, you look really well. And I was like,
Oh my God.
You think I'm fat.
Yeah. Panic. Yeah. Panic.
It's the most stupid thing. Yeah. And everyone talks about it. Like it's really common. Like, we all just I don't know why we associate the word like well or healthy with like, I'm huge. Yeah, you think I've like, I don't know. It's awful.
It's essentially going in, I remember in my head, if someone said that to me, it would be like pure stone cold evidence that I put on weight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And going, that is everything I wanted to avoid.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you saying, oh, you look healthy. I'm like, well, I fucking gained then.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is horrendous. And so now I've got to go straight back into this thing. I mean, the landscape is changing now. Sorry to bring it back to drama school again, but like it's kind of like being in the arts. Yeah. I think. And it is changing, but hugely. But there is still so much pressure.
Yeah.
To look a certain way.
Yeah. Yeah, when you have that in your brain where it's like it is your coping mechanism, of course that's where you're gonna go.
Yeah.
Like if you don't feel like adequate in other respects, then you're gonna be like, how can I walk out? Like there is not a lot that you can control. Like I can't control like whether someone likes me, but I can like make myself smaller. And yeah, of course you're gonna go there when like things are the way they are in the world. But yeah.
Growing up with I'm sure all of my 90s born friends and you know, being informative years, being in the noughties, watching America's Next Top Model, the like early seasons, or everyone, they were always told to pose like this.
Oh.
This is guys are watching if there's a little clip. All America's Next Top Model people were told to pose like they were hunching forward with their collarbone coming out and like with sort of like this, with like basically like a rag doll.
Yeah.
And so that was like, well, that's pretty.
Yeah.
That's what pretty is, because Tyra Banks says it is, so therefore it must be true.
Awful.
And so all the time I was just like,
yeah.
Just trying to be as small as possible. When did you know that you wanted to be in music? Has that always been a thing?
Yeah, I mean probably all through all of this, like and I do think that that's one thing that like maybe if that all of that hadn't happened I probably wouldn't be doing it, because I don't know, I mean I started like posting on YouTube like mid like when I was like 14 and yeah, like I'd just like write songs and then put them on the internet, and that was like a little thing that I could do. And like most of them are not up anymore because they were horrible. Like no one wants to see that. I was like those songs.
It's always so funny when you look back and you're like, oh God.
Yeah.
Oh God, get them off.
Horrible. Don't want that on the internet. But yeah, like that gave me such a like thing that I could do. And it's just grown like, I've met so many people through it, and it's like really built a like world around me that I feel like I've got a place in. And
well, it's like I don't often like using the word tribe because I think it's overused, and it's sort of like, and it becomes a lot of things, they become like slightly tacky over time, because you're like, because it's the kind of thing that comes up in shitty Instagram posts being like, find your tribe. But genuinely it is finding your people with whom you feel safe, with whom you don't need to push, you don't need to mold yourself into something else. And it does come with time. It literally, when you stop trying to like a square peg in a round hole, trying to like force yourself into situations.
Yeah,
and that's basically what secondary school is.
Yeah.
That you're going, I need to survive here. Mm. And I need to be like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. So I want to make myself like that.
Yeah.
And and it hurts. It's uncomfortable. Mm. And then you just, do you know what? A little weird segue. So when I was late teens, then early 20s, when I was at drama school, and just before drama school, I was so terrified of singing.
Yeah.
Fact, like, so terrified. To the point when on, like, one of the first days of... one of the first days of Guildhall... we have a secret language, Felipe. one of the first days of Guildhall... We had to go ka 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 ka.
Yeah.
That was it. We literally had to go ka 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 ka, and I cried.
Oh.
I cried because I didn't want to. Because they were like, just go ba 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 ba.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't do it. Oh. And like cry, like sort of freaking out because I was so afraid. And then we were taught singing, obviously, at Guildhall, but it was very much like. You sing in this certain way.
Yeah,
you're taught to sing like this, which is not how I naturally sing.
No.
And therefore, every time we did a singing showing in second year. Oh, this is a story. Okay.
Oh.
And I had an opaque water bottle.
Mm.
And I filled it with wine.
Oh my God.
Because I was so scared.
Fair enough.
Because I know, I was so scared.
Aww.
That I was like, also the fact that, big reason why I don't drink anymore. But like, I was so scared of singing in public.
Yeah.
Singing in front of the first years, my year, the third years, the faculty, and fucking it up.
Yeah.
That I was like, I'm terrified. And I got through it. But
the wine or the
No, both. Big time. But it was horrendous. It was so frightening. But I realized it's because every time I opened my mouth, I was meant to sing in this way that wasn't natural.
Yeah.
And so therefore I didn't know what was going to come out.
Mm.
I didn't know what noise was going to come out.
Yeah.
And it was really scary.
That's
because it wasn't controlled.
Yeah.
And then suddenly when I left Guildhall, and then a few years later started writing stupid songs.
Yeah.
And like and doing like weird little bits on the ukulele and suddenly started just because there was no one in the room going no
yeah
just started singing naturally, suddenly all the fear went away because I was like, oh, I'm not trying to square peg it into a round hole.
You're making your own songs.
You're making your own songs and your own thing.
It's
like it's not someone going, you need to be like this and if you don't do this it's not going to work. And suddenly I was like, oh, again, I'm free.
Yeah.
I'm free.
Oh.
But it's, I think it's like a huge metaphor for all of this stuff about just going, when you're trying so hard, so afraid of everything that's going on around you, so afraid of the environment that you're in, of what's going to come next. You can't in any way predict what's going to come next because it's not natural to you, that you then just do start to control various bits. And whether it's like numbing with alcohol or with drugs or with an eating disorder, like it's only when you then step away from that environment or given the space to step away from that environment, i.e. like COVID, and are able to go, oh, I can actually just do just, this my way.
Yeah, and it's... Yeah, once you realise... And I think when you're in it, you can't even... You don't even have the space to be like... This is what I'm like, this is what I need, like, this is how I function.
Oh my
like,
gosh, yeah.
You're just, like, you're numb and you're all you do is you're just a shell of a human being. But once you, like, start to get better and then you can realise that, like, I find it really overwhelming in noisy places.
Yeah.
And I want to wear earplugs.
Like, yeah.
And that's, like, such an easy thing to, like, realise about yourself. But the amount that that's, like, helped me or, like, I'm, like, fiddling with something.
Mm.
Like, things, you just find things that make living with your brain in a world that like is not suited for anyone's brain, I don't think. So
you find your own coping mechanisms that might not work for somebody else. Actually, Max Selwood and I were having this conversation last week and we were like, what something that makes me really angry is when someone shoves their own opinion, their own way of doing something and spreads it like fucking Lurpak over somebody else.
Yeah.
And going, this is what you need to do. If you're not doing these things and you're not working hard enough, and you're like, that shit doesn't work for me.
No, yeah.
And so finding your own way forward. Have you seen the She produced, suggests, introduced these. I haven't got one yet, but I really want to get one. They're rings, they're fidget rings.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen these. That sounds so cool.
Fidget rings.
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
I want to speak into my phone and say, fidget ring, fidget ring, fidget ring.
Yeah, reminder.
So I'll get an Instagram ad that they're like, okay. Yay!
Literally. So oh my crazy. God. Yeah, you will. You actually will. It's so scary. I hate that. Oh my God. Yeah, we're going to get so many ads.
So crazy. We just really thought that we don't know why. We just thought that you'd really like a bit of it.
So recommended so for you.
Yeah. What? Oh my God. So we just know you really well. Yeah.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Having a creative outlet, especially for a creative, I mean, it won't work if there's someone who is, I can never remember, producer Felipe, do you know which side of the brain is the, like, creative one and which side is the... science one.
You mean as in left or right?
Yeah.
I can search it up. I can get back to you.
And that's what you're here for.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what my point was about that, but like...
creative outlets.
For someone who is very much on the creative side of the brain, it's amazing to have a creative outlet. That's not necessarily going to work for somebody who is very much like science-based.
No, exactly.
But... being able to go, like, if you have this energy surrounding you, especially if it's sort of negative energy, and then being able to channel that into something creative,
just
means it goes somewhere rather than just, like, getting bigger and bigger and manifesting into this big fucking, like, furry cloud, like this one that's sitting on my knee right now.
It's the right side, by the way.
Oh! It's if you're creative.
Yeah, the right side is creative, the left side... it's apparently logic.
Well, our right sides must be...
they are booming.
Working overtime. The other side...
they are pumping weights 24/7. I'm sort of aware of, I think maybe, I don't know, giving... I never want to, like, when people ask me about my diet and stuff, when I had an eating disorder, I'm always very wary of being this, this, and this, because I don't want to give people tips.
No.
in school, did you become really adept at, like, having ways of hiding it?
Oh, again, I don't know, like, whether things are, like, triggering and stuff, but I was just, the things that I would do to, and, like, at home as well, because, like, when I'd be at home, my mum, like, bless her, like, she would, like, be like, you haven't had something. She'd, like, check in the bin and stuff. Like, she was, like...
oh, she's, like, hypervigilant.
Yeah, very... and, yeah, like, she had to be because I was terrible. I was such a sneaky child. Like I was saying, it's so irrational. Mm. But at that time, you just... it just feels like the most natural thing to do. I'm like, I'm not going to... like, why would... I don't
why
know.
Why would I eat this?
Yeah.
Like, why would I... yeah.
Yeah. But...
and, like, covering it up becomes... the main thing.
Yeah.
It becomes like... do you know what's weird, though? Is that when mine got to a point, and I think that this is maybe true for some other people who were suffering, and when it was coming from quite a different place, and it's actually quite exposing and difficult to talk about, but like... I got to a point because I was so desperate to be seen, to be acknowledged as a human, that I wanted people to notice. Wanted people to know.
Yeah.
I wanted people to worry.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's very specific, like, to from where I was coming from, which is obviously a very, like, selfish standpoint.
No, but it's a... And I think it's so subconscious. It's just still, like...
Yeah.
It is your, like, coping mechanism of, like, I need... Like, something's going wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to talk about it. So,
yeah, I need,
but
to, I can, need to be seeing.
And, like, if you've got a broken leg or...
Yeah.
Like, everyone uses that example, but it's like, if you've got a broken leg, everyone's like... You've got a broken leg. We need to fix it.
Yeah.
But if you've got, like, stuff going on in your brain that people, like, it's so difficult to relate to people's, like, mental things because...
You can't see it. It's not tangible.
Yeah, and it's so different for everybody. It's like...
Yeah.
It's like, why are you struggling? Like, but...
It's not muscular. It's not going, I have pain in the left side of my knee and it's... shooting up into my thigh and people are like, oh, I know exactly what that is. It's not that because it's so specific to the individual that it's very, very difficult to understand it a lot of the time. And often, you know, when I explain it in the way of going like the irony of making myself smaller and able to be like to be seen.
Oh, God.
Don't worry about that. It's I definitely there was a point when like I really wanted people to notice.
Yeah.
Because I was really unwell and no one seemed to care.
Yeah.
And I was like, why the fuck does no one care? And so it just got, what lessons did you learn during this time, if any, that you can kind of pick out?
Yeah, I think, I guess that thing about like everyone's like different and got their like own things that they find difficult about the like just being a human being and realizing that like you might not like doing things that other people like doing or like you might need to do things slightly differently. I got like when I was in treatment they were like we think that you have autism and then I got diagnosed with that and I think that really helped a lot because I was like I think up until that point I was like why do I find stuff that everyone else is finding fine, like, so hard? And I was like, something, like, I'm just a, like, faulty human being. Like, why am I so, like...
There's faulty wiring and therefore like, I'm a weak. Bad person or something.
It's embarrassing that I, like, can't handle things like this.
Mm.
But then getting that diagnosis, it was like, I'm not, like... like faulty I'm just like a bit different you've
oh
got a, something different about you
I really love having conversations like this because I've really been preaching recently that people go oh my gosh diagnosis is so dangerous it's so and I'm like maybe some people but I honestly think it saves lives
I think so I just think like I think everybody's brain is so different and like whether you have autism or ADHD or whatever anything it's all or if you don't have one of those things, like everybody's got their unique parts of them that will make them find things easier or difficult. And if you can just like see people as like individuals that like need different things, that's so like helpful. But until we get to that point, I think diagnosis is so like important so that people can actually like be able to like I like could wear my headphones in school and like that was like
and it helps just being able to
it's
like
so silly,
actually
but...
manage stuff and be able to do it in a way that works for you rather than just going like I think I did an episode about ADHD like not understanding like I would go to maths sit down and then it'd be half an hour later I'd be like where was I and the teachers were just like oh she's shit and she's not particularly bright it's like no. She's got ADHD you idiots
it's so silly
and it's so and people go oh the danger of a diagnosis blah 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 but I really from my own experience and for other people I've spoken to, I seriously disagree with that statement.
Yeah.
People go, oh, diagnosis. Yeah. It just, because, and often their, not all the time, but often their reasoning is that it gives people an excuse. And I'm just like, oh, you go, fuck off.
That's, I think it's just, it comes from a place of not understanding, which I can get because it's so hard.
Yeah.
Like I was saying before, just to empathize with like mental health stuff because it's so like,
Because it's so individual and so internal like it's not like you turn blue like Violet Beauregard. It doesn't happen like that. Yeah. It's really difficult to see and empathize with, and I do really understand that.
Yeah.
How is your attitude towards food today?
Good. Yeah. I think it's a like thing of like you were saying, it's like it's what I do. Like it's a very much like an active. When things are a bit more difficult, it's a like thing of like I really have to like think about this, and I have to be like I need to just stick to like my meal like routine or whatever, because like if like I don't know, things are slightly less like feel slightly less controlled in my life, then it is the thing that I'll turn to. I'm in a place where I'm like I want the energy. I want to be able to do everything. And I've seen the lows and I don't want that.
I don't want to go back there. No.
And obviously it's not a choice, and like people relapse and that's not like them being weak or obviously. No. But I think I've gained so many like other coping skills, and like I've just got such a bright, vivid world around me that like I like going back there doesn't feel like something. I don't think I could slip back there the same way anymore. But I think it is a dangerous thing of like when you know that like when things are a bit darker or you have less in your life, that is like that's where you might be headed, but you just have to be so aware of it and be like, and everyone around me is very aware of it. I'm quite open about it, because a lot of the people that I'm surrounded by have also struggled with it. So I think and then like my family have held my hand through it all. So they're like so aware, and I think everybody is just looking out for each other, and it's just about being aware. But I'm in a place where it's like food allows me to do things. If I didn't eat enough, I would not be me. Like I'd be a completely different person, and I don't want to be a completely different person. So that's why I eat. And I'd like to get to a place where it's like not even a thought. But I think that just takes time.
I think it does it does take time. It takes a lot of time, and you have to be really forgiving of yourself when those things come in. You're like, oh, I know what this is. I know the soul patterns, because the thing is, it doesn't just shut off one day.
No, it really
doesn't. It's a gradual thing, and some days it feels like you're making no growth. Yeah, and it's really frustrating. But actually, if you did a little like time lapse, you'd see the growth happening, going bit by bit. But it's just really difficult to see when you're in it. When you were in recovery, were you in a hospital or in like a recovery center sort of thing?
I was never in like a psych ward, but I was in like general hospital for a bit, which I find that like when I think about that, I feel really like guilty about it, and I find that really difficult to like think about even. But
yeah, I understand that.
And then I did a lot of like day, like it was sort of like school, I guess. You'd go. I did that for a bit in. You just go in the day and then go home at night, which was so good for me. It's particularly because I think the thinking always was like I had such a supportive family that they wanted to keep me with my family, because whereas I think for a lot of people the problem lies like in family, so it's like taking them out of that environment is necessary.
Yeah.
But and I was so young that I'm that's something where I feel so grateful that I never had to go into like a psych ward.
Yeah, and be sent away for like a long time, especially in COVID-y times as well.
Because I
was friends of friends with someone who was in a ward during COVID, and couldn't leave.
Yeah.
Did you meet anyone in that recovery that you're still in touch with, or like?
Yeah, I met a lot of people, like so many people who I'm really close to. I've met I've got a really close friend who I'm like, we weren't in like treatment at the same time, but we knew someone who was in treatment, and like we had a mutual friend. And
okay.
And so we are now like in contact a lot, and that's really nice, like, because I guess we don't have the shared like trauma of treatment, have like just a bond over both having been through it, but we weren't like at the same time. And totally that's really that. Nice. And yeah, there are loads of people that...
Not like that.
No.
Not
like that. No. With
the people who have come out the other side, it's such a, like, yeah, a nice thing to have.
What would you say to young women or young people, young men as well, because it's not strictly, you know, around women, but to anyone who's really struggling right now, is really in the depths of it, is there any advice that you would give them?
Yeah, I think, it's so hard. I guess I'd just emphasise, like, how crazy different, like, life can be in there. It's just so much, it's so, when you come out the other end, you gain such a, like, you just, there's just so much joy in the world. There's so much darkness, but there is also so much joy. And, like, you're in a place right now where you're not, like, you don't really get to have like any sort of sense of yourself or the people around you, and that's so hard to get out of.
So I
think I'm going all over the place, but I think like you really need to like rely on people, find people around you, or you need to like get help so that it's not all on you to drag yourself out of that, because I don't think it's really possible to do it on your own when you're in that place.
No, it's not.
And you need people to like pull you out. Like you can't do that yourself, because you almost don't want to. Because you don't want to. Like I don't.
You don't want to. And also, if you, in my experience, actually, when it happened to me, the only way I actually stopped doing it was because I found something else to do.
Yeah.
And one thing replaces another.
Mm.
And so I talk about the addiction umbrella of, like, if you're holding onto something at the moment, say it's an eating disorder, there's all these other things in the canopy above you, which are just ready to go and take its place.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
And they, like, and you think it's protecting you. It's not. It's a shitty umbrella.
Yeah. Terrible. Oh, that's so true. But if you can find, like...
Yeah.
Like, because I think with, like... my autism and like all I think most people who go through like an eating disorder or an addiction or something, we're quite like obsessive people, and we have like
we're kind of like all or nothing,
all or nothing. That's the word. I am the most all or nothing. Like ask my mother, she like will talk about this, but she I'm the most all or nothing person.
Me too.
I'm like, it's not perfect, so I'm not gonna do it. But
I don't love him immediately.
So and we've just got so much energy and so much like in us, but and that can really go down a bad path if you let it. But if you let it go down a good path, then it's so great. Like we can do like really cool things. But it's just so much about being aware of like how your brain works and what like what can go wrong and what can go right.
Yeah.
And trying to allow the people around you to help you. Or if you don't have those people around you, like, I mean, there are so many services. Like it's so difficult right now because of I think it's like a big like epidemic now. Like
eating disorders are rife.
Yeah.
So I was at all girls boarding school. A lot of girls in my year really struggled. I'd almost say like majority had something at some point.
Really, yeah.
And there was one girl in my year went to the school nurse and said, I think Emily's not eating, blah, blah, blah. And I remember at lunch, she came and got me and took me up to surgery and was like, we just need to weigh you.
Oh.
And I got weighed and I was really scared. I was really like thin.
Yeah.
But because I was still at a healthy weight in that, like for my height. I remember her going, and you can jump off. You're fine. Even though I'd lost so much, it was just like, because you're still in that healthy boundary,
it's so
then it's not a problem.
Yeah.
rather than going, clearly something's happening because you've lost a shit ton of weight.
Yeah, yeah.
Going, oh no, you're still healthy, so it's fine.
Oh, it's so bad because as soon as you're starting to lose weight and things, that's when your body goes into, your brain and body goes into this, like, that's why you're so irrational.
Yeah.
Because, like, you're in this weird mode of, I know when I get a bit hungry, it's like when you're hangry.
Yeah.
But it's to that, like,
well, you're
extreme,
in, like, starvation.
Yeah, everyone knows that feeling of being hangry. And I am a horrible person when I'm hangry. But, like, it's that to a massive extreme. And it's almost like I that's when I can relate to it most, is when it's like just before dinner and I'm like, I'm quite hungry now.
Mm.
And that's when I can like almost feel old me being like, when I'd be like, when I start getting irrational, it's such a I think it's a really...
It's just a reminder of like...
Yeah, like a biological thing of when you're in that like starvation mode, then you are irrational. And if people can't be caught until they're in that mode, then it's so difficult to help them. It's such a...
It'd be so difficult if you... Like, it'd be so much easier, sorry, if you could catch... If all of us could catch the problem before it progressed it would be so much better if that was... If things like that were able to happen, and I guess like they're to, I don't know. I'm gonna link a load of places down below where the lines that you can call and things like that if you're really struggling. So we've talked a lot about your journey and your history and everything like this. But what I do really want to know is, what are the things about you now, you as a person, that you really love and cherish?
Oh, that's such a...
It's such a nice question. It's such a tough question.
A nice question, but uncomfortable. It's a
good, I know, because everyone
say
goes
nice
like...
things.
Everyone either wants to make a joke.
I'm like, what can I say? Oh, God, horrible. I don't know. I think I do have a lot of energy, and I feel like when I put that into the right things, it can be good.
Mm.
I'm like...
I think there's like, I see like a lot of resilience and bravery of being able to like talk about something that a lot of people don't understand.
Yeah, yeah.
And is very personal and very, very difficult. And so to be able to do that with such openness and like do it on my platform, I think is really amazing.
That's very nice. What do you love about yourself?
I love it when people ask that. I think it's only happened once. And I kind of had to delete those lines and cut it out.
No.
I always say I'd like my bravery. Yeah, being really, really brave.
Yeah.
Again, and I think fearlessness and being fearless is a great thing to have.
It is.
And like perhaps when you've been to a really, really dark place, really bad place, and then being able to come back from it.
Yeah.
Not to say that people who haven't returned from it are not brave in themselves, because it's everyone else's journey, and some of us, unfortunately, are luckier than others. But like being in a place where I literally lost. Everything apart from my couple of my like best friend who's amazing, but I lost majority of my friends, nearly lost my family, nearly lost my job, like everything went, and scraping myself back from that, I've been like, ye fucking legend.
I love that.
So
you...
I've been like, I like that.
I love that you like have been through that, and you've got the... You're able to share it. Like, that's such a selfless thing to have that story and be like, I'm gonna like talk about it and so that I can help people. That's
alchemize something really negative into something really positive.
Wonderful.
I think that's the best. Thank you. And we have another portion of the podcast we call Thank You Letters.
Oh.
We ask you to express gratitude for a person, a place, or a thing, or one of all three, or a couple, for which you are grateful.
I think my family, my mum in particular, like, we've been through so much, and I feel so bad, but we joke about it all now, and we're really, really close, I think, because like, I've spent more time with my mum than I think anyone has spent with their mum. Like, we are so close, and she's she's been through so much with it all. And the fact that she like is still my biggest cheerleader, wants the best for me, and would never like leave my side is
that's incredible.
Very lucky, and I'm very aware that most people don't have that experience with their. I listened to the one we were talking about with some, who was it? Helen Bauer. Sorry, Helen Bauer.
Helen Bauer. I love it. But then also Elliot Salt, the game one, was like, I'm sorry, Helen Bauer, my mom's best friend. She was like, I'm sorry, but everyone's listened to that Ellen episode and been like,
I'm sorry.
That's all right. She won't mind. thank you so much for coming to see us today. Thank you for putting up with Michael the cat.
The best. It
means a lot. I'm not sure where he's going. He's probably creating havoc somewhere. And thank you for your openness and your honesty. Really appreciate it. And I'm sure there are so many people listening who will be able to relate so much. It's amazing. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you or anyone you know is struggling or needs help with the issues discussed on Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends, please visit the podcast bio where you will find contact numbers with people readily available to give support. Please get in touch with your stories at either contact@whydoyouthink.com or on Instagram at Emily_Lang_UK. To have your story or your thank you letter read on the podcast, please put survivor story or thank you letter either at the top or in the subject line. We really want to hear from you. We don't care if it's a catastrophe story or a small win from your week, your favorite place, person, or thing. We are here for all of it. Don't forget to rate and subscribe, and I'll talk to you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.